The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show where we are now in the PS5 era. We are talking about PS5 games, the console is out, the amazing launch lineup is out there, and we in particular are going to be diving deep into one specific game, Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, which is one of my favorite launch PS5 games, and easily one of my favorite PS4 games because it's also available there. Before we go any further, full spoilers are in effect, so if you haven't finished the main campaign in particular, but we're going to dive into side stuff as well, if you haven't played through all of Spider-Man that you want to before listening to this, pause the show, go play. We'll be here for you when you're done. It is well worth your time. If you haven't read my review on IGN, I gave it a 9. I called it amazing. I loved it, so please go check it out and play it. But we're going to dive really deep into the game today. I'm really excited. Today, I'm joined by Lucy O'Brien. Hey, Lucy.
Hello, Jono.
And also joining us today is Brian Horton, the creative director for Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales from Insomniac Games. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
We're really excited to have you. As I said, going to jump fully into spoilers for this, but I just wanted to say congratulations to you and the team launching this game on two systems coinciding with the PS5 launch in the middle of what this year has been. I can't even imagine the undertaking that is, and it is such a wonderful, joyous game to have right now in particular. So thank you first off to you and the team, and congrats on this amazing launch.
Oh, thanks so much. The Insomniac family worked very hard. We put a lot of love into this game, and it was a challenging year, but we also do believe this is a game that I think we needed for 2020.
Yeah, we've been saying over and over that this game, I mean, for all its, you know, there's a lot of drama there, but it's also just such a joyful game. And it's just such a lovely game to have at the end of this really difficult year. It felt like I needed it. I know that sounds stupid, but like as I was playing through and people were wishing Miles, you know, happy holidays on the snowy streets of New York City, I was just like, this is what I want, what I've needed. This year has been so crap. And it was a perfect cap to the end of this year, you know.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I think we all just want to walk through the streets of New York right now, don't we? I mean, just the idea of being in the season, embracing the holidays. That's what was so cool about it, is we were able to think about what is the best thing we could do for Miles Morales and juxtapose this amazing holiday season with a real drama that he has to solve as his first big adventure as a Spider-Man.
Yeah, it works so well. And especially as someone who lived in New York for a while, I always talk about like Christmas time in New York as sort of the idealized version of New York. And I think a lot of the way people who don't live in New York probably think about it is like the New York they've seen in movies or when they light the Christmas tree at 30 Rock and all of that. And so to have this very, very nostalgic feeling of New York, I think Lucy has said this on a past show, but she was even feeling nostalgia for it, and she never lived in New York.
I'm from New Zealand. I'm so far divorced from New York, but I've seen enough films and consumed enough pop culture that it does have that nostalgic pull for me. And you all did such a magnificent job at recreating that. One of my favorite things to do in Miles Morales was just looking through the windows into people's Christmas displays. I just loved that so much. You know, it's just such a beautiful little touch. And you know, seeing the candy canes on the fridge, just little things like that. And I adored it. And again, felt nostalgic. What the hell?
Yeah, the attention to detail that the Insomniac team brings to our games is one where we do the research, but it's a lot of it's just driven by the individuals and trying to add things that they feel add personality in life and a sense of culture, especially with Harlem. It was essential for us that we got East Harlem correct in its ethnicity and its diversity. That was the heart and soul of Miles Morales.
Yeah, it comes across in, I think, such a natural way throughout the experience as the game keeps bringing you back to East Harlem and you keep getting to see more facets of Miles's life, and whether it's Roxxon moving in on the territory or his apartment building or the nearby bodega or the other shops and the people you get to know, it feels almost effortless in the way that the game is able. And I understand there's so much effort that went into it, but that's sort of how highly I think of it, is that it just so naturally comes across that this is how this part of the city is. And this is what matters to it. And that sense of importance of protecting the neighborhood and protecting the spirit of the people who live there just really comes across so well in the story.
Well, thank you so much.
I do want to sort of jump in, I think, on a larger note too, because I definitely want to talk about the focus on Harlem and Miles's life there and everything. But I did want to sort of start from a broader point and just sort of generally ask, on the note of this being, you know, Miles's really first starring video game adventure and being a new take on this character who has had a relatively shorter lifespan than Peter Parker has, but has already had, I think, such a very well-known and recognized history. What did Insomniac want to bring fresh to the character and this interpretation of Miles, but also make sure that you were staying true to the origins of the character from the comics and what people know?
Yeah, we always start with the source. So our friends at Marvel Games, we got together and had a conversation about the original comics from Brian Michael Bendis and Sarah Pacelli as the Rosetta Stone that we start with, the essence of the character. And we knew that Miles is different than Peter Parker, but he has some similarities. The thing that's really different, though, is the attention to friends and culture and family. We let the story come forward for us, and that was the place we started. And you know, Miles is from Brooklyn, and we didn't want to make that a small thing. So we decided to put the drama around, what if Miles had to move from Brooklyn to Harlem, where his mother was? That could be sort of the center point of his personal drama as he's trying to learn this new neighborhood. The player is going to get to understand this new neighborhood. And from a mechanics perspective, we knew as a hero, Miles Morales is going to express those unique abilities that he has, which is bioelectricity and invisibility. So creating an explosive new Spider-Man was a big part, was one of our big pillars and a mandate. And the thing that I think we spent the most amount of time was not only his powers, but what was the right villain that was going to partner or sort of be the resistance and the pressure that Miles would have to deal with. And that's when we came to the idea of reinventing the Tinkerer and placing this two-sided war between the Tinkerer, the Underground, and Roxxon. So those were the ingredients that sort of were the beginnings of our conversations, and then we built the narrative around.
Yeah, I was going to ask you whether or not, you know, who came first? Was it the reinvented Tinkerer, or was it Miles's childhood friend? And I was, you know, I was curious if there was ever a point where Finn was not the Tinkerer and maybe had some other kind of dramatic arc or play in his life. But it sounds like she was going to be the Tinkerer from the very beginning.
Yeah, we had this wonderful license with Marvel to look at the Tinkerer, who's one of the oldest villains in Spider-Man canon, like within the first year of comics, and say, well, this is an underserved villain. We haven't seen the Tinkerer much in popular culture media. So what if we reinvent the Tinkerer for a modern day? And with all great Spider-Man stories, we want the worlds to collide. And that's the personal making the Tinkerer Finn Mason, Miles' childhood friend, was sort of the beginning of what we felt was going to be the drama of that story. And how does a young hero reconcile his feelings for someone who's doing things that aren't so great for the city and actually potentially endangering his home. So that was the genesis of this human story that the world's colliding. And getting Marvel on board with making Finn Mason a young woman and friend with Miles, it was, I'd like to say there was a big drama or fight about it, but they were so excited about this direction and we built from there.
Yeah, it's a wonderful turn. And I think what the story does so well with Finn and the Tinker is that both sides of that character do get to have importance to the story. It is not just about her taking this dark, dramatic turn into villainy. It is really about Miles's relationship with Finn and Spider-Man's relationship with the Tinker and how those two come together, as you were saying. And I think that was so unexpected for me and so lovely, as Lucy was saying, to have that, the marriage of those two in the story. And I was curious about sort of the overall thought process when it goes into the villains of a Spider-Man story, because obviously there's a huge rogues gallery from the early days of, you know, Peter Parker's life as Spider-Man. There are key figures for Miles, obviously with the Prowler, and I think the really, really, really great implementation of Aaron Davis here. I was sort of curious about where the team's head was when it came to sort of the scope of how many villains you wanted to be part of the story, how important it was to make sure they tied back to Miles's personal life. Sort of how did that discussion go about?
Well, because we knew the theme was going to be family and home, Aaron Davis had, you know, going back to the original comics, the Prowler was the main tension for Miles Morales that he has to deal with. We wanted to change the characterization of the Prowler, and we felt that creating an Aaron Davis that is reflecting the moments of this particular story. So if I rewind a little bit, let's talk about where Miles Morales started. So in the first game, we see this young kid who endures this terrible tragedy, the death of his father. Peter Parker works at Feast, has to deal with the Rhino, and ultimately gets bitten by this spider. But that event of Miles' father dying, we said, well, what would Aaron Davis do at that point if he was this criminal? What if he turned a new leaf? What if he wanted to go straight? What if he wanted to get back into the family because of never seeing his brother's son again? That was really interesting and something very different from any incarnation we've seen of Aaron Davis. And so then the idea of him going on this redemption journey and then having to be brought back into the fold and become the Prowler and actually giving Miles about how to move forward. And that, we thought there was some wonderful push and pull there. And with all the best intentions of him trying to save Miles, he was actually doing the opposite. So we get to see Miles teach his uncle something, and he has this wonderful redemption arc at the end. And I think that's the thing about drama, is you want to create these situations where you feel that people have the best intentions, but they don't always make the right decisions. And Miles definitely goes through a lot of those, making not the best decisions, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he earns, and that's the journey we wanted ultimately to get to.
Hey everybody, Zach Ryan here to talk to you about IGN's new weekly show, The Review Crew. Each week, we're gathering folks from all over the gaming community to talk about the biggest and best games. We'll dive deep into each review.
It's friggin' awesome about that.
All these monks just running away from you
it
in
is
every direction.
Pandemonium.
Yeah.
Talk about the things that we loved, the stuff that needs improvement, and probably have some spirited debates and laughs along the way.
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
We're kicking things off with Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but in the coming weeks, we're talking about Demon's Souls, Xbox Series X, Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales, PlayStation 5, and Cyberpunk 2077. You can tune in Mondays on IGN.com or listen to the full audio version later in the week on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast service. Hell, you can do both. I'm not your boss. Let us know what games you want to hear about, but more importantly, let us know who you'd like to see on the show. Until then, you're already in the right place with IGN.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the most glorious juxtapositions in Miles Morales is the light and shade in the so-called villains, you know, because I think besides, you know, the ultimate big baddie, Finn and Miles' uncle have, you know, they've got a lot of, there's a lot of pain there. And it's interesting seeing the juxtaposition with a character like Rhino, who's just an old school, like almost like 80s style, you know, cartoon character, with someone like Finn, who is so kind of broken inside. And I felt like the portrayal of Finn in particular just really, you know, with the great, fantastic performance as well, just really was quite heartbreaking. And I found it really satisfying in a, I love the first Spider-Man, but I found it almost this one more kind of relatable, because it was just more, it was a, it's a sort of a more of a human level story.
We wanted to bring that down to the friendly neighborhood level. And I think because it is so family centric too, we can all imagine being around the holiday table, right? Having a meal. And we also play with the idea, what does a family dinner look like nowadays? It could be a mix of friends and family. It really is a different time when you see these people who are important to your lives. Even though Finn and Miles were friends, they both share this pain. They both went through trauma, and how you see Miles deal with that trauma and come out one side, and how she dealt with that trauma and went another way. We think that, and Finn and Miles sort of have dealt with their trauma in different ways, and that in a way became another theme that we could sort of play with and sort of unify these characters and put them in the same circle.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring that up, made me think immediately the Christmas dinner scene that they all have together early in the story just immediately popped into my head as such a lovely moment when I was playing. And now thinking about it even more in context, it is that it's Miles and his mother and Finn and Genki and sort of the specter of what the family has gone through, but also the things we don't yet know about what Finn has gone through. There's this wonderful combination of all of those things at work in the story that then just get laid out more and more as we progress.
And we tried to make sure that scene, we needed some brightness in our story because there was going to be some dark turns. We wanted to have those moments where the family comes together and we see what is lost, right? We're seeing these people, you want them to be a family. You want them to return to that moment. And you can see how much these two people, Finn and Miles, their relationship is deep, but yet there's been a break. There's been a disconnect, and they're trying to reconcile that disconnect throughout the story. And Mary Kenny, one of our writers, wrote some beautiful scenes. And one of my favorite scenes is the scene at the church where they're trying to figure out how to express each other's side of the equation. She made a promise to her brother and he made a promise to Peter to protect the city, and that they're both at odds, but they both want the same thing. And I just love that heartbreaking kind of raw emotion that they're able to share. And then they talk about why they're at the church and how they share this memory of seeing this choir. And you realize, oh, they're so good friends and you want them to work it out. And that's the kind of stuff that I think elevates stories from being plot driven to being character driven. That's what we try to do at Insomniac, especially within the Spider-Man series.
Yeah, it was. I totally felt that, of just wanting them to be able to work things out. And as the finale goes, it is just so crushing, but in a somewhat hopeful way, like in the, you know, Finn coming to terms with what's transpired and being willing to make that sacrifice at the end. It is this beautiful full circle moment where, as you said, it is about the characters and less so what a superhero plot may be. It is about this version of Miles and this story that you've crafted. And just speaking a little bit to what you're saying about why they were having this conversation at the church, for example, I love the way this game really layers in Miles's history, because of course we saw, you know, foundational moments of his life in Marvel's Spider-Man, the first game, but there is so much more to him and his relationship with Finn, and that gets layered in not just the story, but the collectibles and the bits of audio you get after Aaron Davis sends you on those missions to collect the audio files. I really loved how layered everything was, and I was curious, was that sort of a top-down thought, or did that just sort of progress naturally from, you know, the team building everything, that everything really did come back to Miles's life and the people around him and his family?
the one thing that's fantastic about working, not the one thing, one of the most exciting things about working with Insomniac Games is we believe our mantra is great ideas come from anywhere. So I can set up a vision and a vector, right? Like we're going here. It's about home. It's about family. It's about the idea of Miles' journey from becoming, you know, becoming the coming of age story. Once you have those sort of pillars in place, the team starts to pull threads and connect, make connections that there's no way I or any of us would have thought of it ahead of time. So when I can tell you about the collectibles, we knew we wanted to do these time capsules, but to see all the little personal stories of how Finn and Miles work together and the fact that they did this little activity of going around the city, urban exploring and hiding these time capsules, it just deepened your understanding of who these characters are. They're completely optional. But if you do collect them and you do listen to those stories, it just endears you more to them and makes you root for them even more. So listening to the writers come up with all these little narratives that tied their relationship together, it was just so exciting to see. And the other thing that was really exciting is the emergence of Aaron Davis and how the activities with him and the beats were a story about how him and his father went separate ways and the tragedy of that story. So those are the things where you can mix mechanics and, you know, like something like, hey, Miles makes beats. So they have that in common with his father and with his uncle. But then you tell those human stories in between. That synergy is what gets me really excited to work on games like these, is you're seeing the team come together and make something more, the parts make something more. And they create this wonderful, synergy between, you know, the gameplay mechanic and the story context.
I'm really curious because in so many ways, and again, I loved the original Marvel Spider-Man, but in so many ways, Miles feels like there are many parts of the Spider-Man game series, this particular series, it feels very refined from the first game. And what's interesting is, you know, we've seen some chatter and some concern that it's not a full game, because of course people, it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's half a game, or it's just a DLC, it's just an expansion. And of course it's really not. It is a full game. It's just not, however, you know, 20 hours long or what have you, but it tells a very full story. And also there's plenty to do within this world. And so I guess, you know, just to sort of ease folks' minds, I mean, did you ever feel restricted, or, you know, kind of like your hands were a little tied because you were working on a game that wasn't a full length AAA game?
I'll say the opposite. In a way, it was liberating to be so focused. I'm a big believer in a way of, when with a story like this, we were able to crystallize the essence of everything. Like we were able to boil it all down and ensure that every single second we had was pointing to these core tenets of the game, the relationships of these characters and the journey that Miles was going on. So for instance, as much as I love the variety of gameplay of Marvel Spider-Man and seeing different perspectives, we made a conscious decision very early on to always be in Miles' shoes. But we wanted to have pacing breaks between human Miles Morales, like the in the apartment scene, with the superhero moments, the most spectacle-driven moments. So we wanted to create the same pacing of Marvel Spider-Man with those up-and-down moments, but just within one character. That was liberating. It allowed us to focus. Another thing I'd say is the cast of characters is smaller. But once again, it allows us to each of those characters and really develop them and weave them more tightly in the narrative. So I can't say that – I'm not saying this is better. I'm just saying for us, it allowed us – more opportunity to be to take the themes that we had and to try to delve into them as deeply as we could. And the opportunities we did tell a side story would be something like in the quest structure with Fisk and dealing with his threat against the city. But once again, it tied back to home. So all of these things feel like they interrelate and have a meaningful impact on Miles' journey to become a hero. So that's why I look at this smaller scale product, I hope, as something that people enjoy and gives them a new kind of thing to look at. And I don't think people are yet ready, maybe the people that have critiques, they weren't ready to understand what that could do for you. But now that I'm seeing players actually play it, they're really enjoying what it has to offer.
Yeah, so. we were frustrated, you know, because we were fortunate enough to be able to play it a little early before it hit stores, and you know, it's frustrating trying to explain to someone like, no, this feels like a top level AAA polished game with everything that you would want from that experience. It's just that we're so used to, you know, for so many years we've been used to a certain length for these things. And I almost find, I feel like Miles and you know, other like Lost Legacy, for example, Uncharted, you know,
one of my favorite games.
Right.
It's great. Yeah.
It's so good, but we almost need a different kind of vocabulary around these games. Cause it's, you know, we're always trying to fit them into sort of, oh, it's 1.5 or it's an expansion or it's not a full game or it's 0.5, you know what I mean? And it's just, it's not, we haven't quite figured out the wording of these yet. And I want to see more of these because this is the kind of single player experience in terms of length, in terms of variety of gameplay. This is what I want. This is what a lot of people want.
Well, let me put it another way. You know, we look at Miles Morales as an essential part of the Spider-Man mythology that we're crafting. And each piece doesn't have to be exactly the same size, but they're both essential. So it's ensuring that it's building on the tapestry we made on the first game, giving Miles his moment to shine and to tell his we're calling it the year two story because he's had a year to be a Spider-Man. But really, we think at the point we're at now, this just tees Miles up to be his own hero, and we just couldn't be happier with the way with the opportunity we had to make a game like this.
Yeah, absolutely. As Lucy was saying, it's one of those things where we see this chatter a lot as we, you know, write our stories, and it was so fulfilling to have played through this experience and be like, this nails the character of Miles, and it uses its length and it uses its size well to tell a really fantastic story that, as you were saying, feels essential. I think some of the, you know, length comparison things, that doesn't really matter, because for me, if I were to jump into whatever may come next, not having experienced this, I would lose out on so much of what makes Miles Miles. And I love what this game is able to do. And especially as you were saying, sort of letting the team focus in and really double down on the themes and motifs that you wanted to express with this game.
100%.
And on that note, sort of, I think one of my favorite things, and I don't necessarily even have a question about it, I would be remiss if I did not mention it, was, you know, the side missions, as you were mentioning, the Fisk storyline that goes on with that wonderful cameo toward the end of it. But the relationship that it brings up with Haley and Spider-Man that you get only the briefest moments of, maybe in parts of the main story, but that helps enrich it even further. And it was one of those things where that quest line ended and I was like, no, I need to know what happens next. I need to see more of this. It was one of those things where I actually really love that this game's length and size and scope is what it is, because it lets you experience all these things and all of them feel so important. And I hope that lets the players be able to jump into every facet of it. I guess on that note, as a question, not to just boast about how much I like the game, I did want to just ask, like, was there any sort of consideration of what was a side mission versus what was main story versus a collectible? Like, was there buckets that the teams, especially the writing teams, maybe considered story elements to go into, or did that just sort of come, you know, as these parts of the games were figured out all around?
Now, the one thing I will say too, because we learned a lot from the first Spider-Man game, amount of planning and pre-planning old and path missions were going to be versus some of our quest content and collectibles, we had a really fantastic template. I mean, I say this often, the Miles team, which is made up of a lot of Spider-Man developers, stood on the Marvel so much to be able to work with as a foundation. So we were able to understand roughly how many missions we wanted for the Golden Path, what those missions were going to be fairly early in pre-production. And when it came to the quests, we knew we just called them friendly neighbor. We wanted a story where we got to meet the people of Harlem. But then our writers and our designers came there and added so much more to it. So let me just give you some examples. We had a card up on the board. It just said, Save the Cat. We knew it was going to be a quest. We knew it was going to be something small. But what does Save the Cat mean? Doesn't mean a whole lot until you have a writer like Ben Arfman, our lead writer, who says, well, the cat's name is Spider-Man the Cat, and he is a bodega cat. And, you know, Evan Narciss was like, you got to have a bodega cat. So we got Evan Narciss saying bodega cat and, you know, Ben Arfman saying Spider-Man the cat. And it's like, well, what if that cat was stolen? Okay, what if the cat's stolen? Well, you need to bring him back. Well, he's got to have a backpack. So then when you get a cat in a backpack and you're like, well, gosh, we have a cat in a backpack. This has to be a suit. So the characters guys go, can we make a suit about the Spider-Man, the cat? I'm like, of course you can. And then an animator says, well, you know what? I did this thing where, you know, Bula says, I did that out in the finisher. Can we do that? I'm like, you better do that, right? Those are the things that sort of unfold organically that you could never plan for. So I'll say the things we're able to plan for gave us a production scope of we wanted the game, but all these wonderful riddles and characters like Haley, for instance, were passion projects. We said, what if we had a muralist in the game? And then we said, well, what if this muralist was deaf? What if, right? Hey, can we do ASL? We really think this is going to be a cool aspect. And them working with our partners at Sony saying, we're going to come up with new technology at the mocap studio so we can bring ASL actors into the booth and make sure we capture this authentically and correctly. Huh. Those are all things that organically happen that the team, because of their passion for deepening and making these characters more rich and more believable. So the fact that you want to see Haley in the future warms our heart because there's so much love in a character like Haley and the other characters that want them to have lives beyond this game. We want people to go, I better see what happens to Spider-Man the cat and Haley, you know, in future endeavors.
I mean, the cast was so strong across the board, the cast of characters. I was very invested in the fate of every single one of them, which is very much testament to the writing. I do have to ask, was there ever a plan to have a less heartbreaking, I mean, as Dorno said, it was a heartbreaking ending that was hopeful, but nonetheless heartbreaking. You know, I'm curious as to what alternates were planned, if there were any.
We had conversations about that ending, earning our ending something to talk about. Like, we know kind of where we want to go, that destination. And we knew we wanted a conflict between these two friends. That was probably the hardest thing to do, right? Is weaving that moment where you go, okay, I believe what she wants to do. I don't, I understand it's not the right thing to do and I have to stop it. And what we wanted for our characters like Aaron and for Finn were redemptions that we felt in a way. Aaron Davis has his own sacrifice. He comes in, he says, I'm going to put my, I'll give up this information. I know that puts me in jail. So he goes back, you know, he is captured for the first time as a criminal, but he does so as an act of sacrifice. And we just wanted to make sure it felt earned. So by having her brother, Rick, and bringing that moment to life, so she sees her brother die, we understand her pain from that moment, and then to recall that and understand she can't let that happen again, made that moment even more resonant and something we hope feels earned, and you can feel her redemption for that. She can't let her best friend die, right? And I'm a softie, but I cry at that end. I play that game 250 times. I must have cried at least 50 or 60 times at that ending because I cared about these characters and I didn't want to see that ending, but we knew that that ending was the ending that it needed to be. So I hope that answers your question.
It very much does. And it was absolutely earned.
Yeah.
Thank you. The
way it reaches that peak. And I think that the balance, as you were saying, of wanting both these characters to have their arcs and for Miles's arc to bring him forward in this world and to make sure that each of those, the supporting characters in this cast, feels supported within the story structure, I think comes across so well. And I did sort of want to talk, I think obviously, you know, the story is the story and I'm not saying tell me what happens next, but I am curious about the cast that you introduce here, when it comes to the larger universe, I did love that there were other characters pulled in from the first game, not just Peter, but nods to other villains and everything. How much of a thought is given, I think, to what comes after the story as well as what's come before? What's sort of the balance of that between also focusing on this story on its own?
Well, sure. I'll take a few steps back and just talk about conversations that Brian Intihar and I had before we even started this game. That we understood that this was going to be where he was passing a torch in a way to us to take the characters that they breathed life into in the first game, Miles Morales, and then say, okay, you're going to go do a thing and take it from there. It's that sort of multiplicative creativity that makes you go, oh, this is a tapestry. You know, once again, I'll bring it back to Insomniac. That's sort of what Insomniac's all about, is we want to let people's ideas infuse and create this really beautiful tapestry. But there is sort of a conversation that we have around directions that things can go to know we're not going to steer someone into a bad spot. So the idea of us having these conversations and knowing sort of how one thing can set up another is part of our planning. And I'm just so excited for you guys to see sort of how things are going to be going in the future. I'll be super vague about it, just to say that we have, we see this world as a living, breathing universe that has many, many more stories.
Well, I mean, you know, there's that mid-credits tease. We must, of course, I know that you probably can't say much about that, but, you know, are we gonna be seeing Venom at all, maybe, soon?
I think Venom's a very cool character.
I appreciate that answer. That is well done. Yeah, I will bounce off of Lucy just to say, yeah, we completely understand what will come. We're looking forward to. But yeah, I appreciate the way I think that the story does tease and set up what the future could hold without letting that be the purpose of its story, or letting there be any sort of feeling of like, we're just building these things in order to give you a surprise later. Like there is such a rounded Miles story and Miles's first solo Spider-Man adventure that really comes across in this game. That is, as we've said, so important to the rest of this universe. I think any fan who thinks I'll wait for the next game, like that is totally the wrong way to go about it. Like this is so vital to, I think, the universe you're building.
Thank you. I mean, that was our focus. How do we do Miles justice? And we're happy that our friends at Marvel gave us the opportunity to expand who Miles is. And hopefully for some people, this will be one of their first experiences with this character as a hero. And they'll always look back at this as like that Christmas favorite. They might pop into their disc and go, oh, it's Christmas time again. It's holiday time. I'm going to play that Miles Morales story. Like we hope it holds a special place in people's hearts as this beautiful little love letter to a character that we all love very, very much.
Absolutely. And to sort of, you know, to rewind a little bit, talk to us about the biggest, you know, Dorno, when we opened this podcast, Dorno mentioned that congratulations on delivering a launch game on new hardware in the middle of a pandemic where we're all working from home in the chaos that is 2020. How hard did you have to pivot when all of a sudden, you know, you had to sort of work from home and everything was kind of chaotic, and again you had to hit a launch date? That's just such an enormous, unfathomable amount of pressure to me, and I you know, I'm really curious as to how difficult that was for you and what was sort of the main hurdles that you overcame.
Well, once again, I'll just say it's a testament to the spirit of Insomniac Games. We had one day saying, hey, what do you guys think about being able to work from home? And 3 days later, everyone in the studio is working from home. And that's our IT department being a Herculean task to ensure that the whole studio is up and running and able to chat much of a lot. Tech works. If I told you we had roughly a 3 day loss, if even that, some people were up and going in the next day, that's the kind of dedication that the team had to ensure that we were going to stay on track. So we persevered through a very challenging time. We had story cinematics that weren't finished yet. We had to figure out how do we maintain the same quality that we achieved on some cinematics and not others, with a different way to perform those cinematics. So we had mocap actors in their house, equipment setting it and recording dialogue. I mean, it was bonkers to really think about it. And I'm sure there's a GDC talk in here somewhere about accomplishing this in the year 2020 with the pandemic. But I will say that it was not an easy task, but that's just another reason always so many of us Insomniac Games, because we found a way to make it work. Then to the PlayStation 5, this is a new piece of hardware. We had to understand how to maximize that. So finishing the game would have been hard enough, but then to do it also on a new piece of hardware, thank goodness the PlayStation 5 is such a powerful system with all these amazing features that made our lives that much easier. So once again, whether it's a synergy or, you know, the alignment of stars, it all came together and we couldn't be happier with the way it turned out.
I mean, this is what we've heard over and over again before the console came out, was that the PS5 hardware actually afforded some kind of, it was easier to program on than perhaps PlayStation's past, which potentially made your job a little bit easier, even though it was new hardware.
It was infinitely easier, and the idea of the way, because we're part of Sony first party now, like, if it's hard to imagine, but we also are recently first party Sony, right? So, but they looked at Spider-Man as the opportunity for PlayStation 5. So they actually were instrumental in ensuring that our game was set up to maximize the PlayStation 5. So you saw that streaming demo that came out first. So that's the sort of love and attention that SIE and the whole organization brought to bear to ensure that we were successful. It is a group effort. It is SIE. It is all of us working with one common goal. And it was kind of a magical thing.
And it's particularly magical, as you say, to me, because especially we, the public side, had no idea about this game until the June reveal. I think for me, you know, we all loved the original Marvel Spider-Man. We're like, well, it sold pretty well. They'll probably make another one or two of these, I would assume. But to then just have this sudden surprise and then to know it's coming with the PS5 and this well-kept secret, I think I'm just so curious of the, you know, the behind the scenes thoughts of, I think, jumping from, you know, working in the office to having to deal with the pandemic to keeping the secret to having the reveal within this year. Was sort of the secrecy around it magnified by the changes in the workflow, or was that made easier because, you know, people weren't going to the office every day?
People weren't sitting on a train with their laptop open.
That has been known to happen. I think the fact that we kept it secret was also, we were so happy that occurred. There was a lot of speculation. There was a lot of talk about work. And we were really tickled to see people thinking, oh, we hear there's a new Spider-Man. You know, so there was like misconceptions on what it was. So when we came out on that day, I think the impact of that trailer, our first reveal, was that much more because people didn't know it was coming. So watch, probably you've seen some of them. But if you watch a number of them like we did after the reveal trailer, watching people's faces as they were trying to process what they were watching, as the electricity is going across the arm and you reveal Miles' face and you see him explode into the city, that euphoria of the unknown into known is like that. So often information is so fluid and people pick up on rumors and then you can't protect that delight. So the fact that we were able to protect that delight because we had to make sure every asset was meaningful leading up to launch, that was building on what this game is. So I've really enjoyed working with Sony and our internal brand, the assets that we're going to make this impact. And in fact, the idea for that first reveal trailer came from Ryan Schneider, our brand manager at Insomniac Games. And that's, I don't know how you guys felt, but did you guys have that coming to the end of the game and you knew, oh, it's that moment from the trailer, or what? When did that dawn on you guys? I'm just interested to know.
I think I can jump in. It was one of those things where I always love thinking about what I've seen in a trailer versus what's going to be in the game. And it had been so long, and I was like, wait a second, where is that? And then I think it was really up until the point where Miles sort of comes crashing back down to Earth with the fight and has to walk toward the reactor. I think that's when it started to tick in my brain. Like, it happened, I think, pretty late, but it was one of those, oh, this is probably it. And it made me want to, it was like, can't he walk a little faster? I want to get there.
But those are those moments where, you know, you come up with an idea and we ended up, it's so funny because, you know, we were still in development and we polished that scene to high shine for the trailer. And we had this moment like, oh, great. Now we have this really difficult thing because of the reveal trailer. We finished this really difficult thing for that last moment, which was so critical. You know, we like to say that in this story, only Miles Morales could have solved this problem, right? It was uniquely qualified to save the day. And that reactor scene was something we wrote on a card way pre him saving the day by using his power, right? And I love making video games. I know that sounds so cheesy, but
no, it doesn't. And this is why we love talking to people like you who make them and make these glorious games for us. We're so lucky.
It's just so awesome to go on these journeys, and they are really hard, and they are often fraught with obstacles. But then you come to the end of it, and you know it goes to the world, and people kind of enjoy it, and you're like, oh, it's worth it. It's worth it. All the sacrifice is worth it.
Absolutely. And I will say, obviously, just speaking for myself here, I'm so excited for the masses out there to now have their hands on this game to jump in, because it was such a special special adventure for me as someone who loved the first game, and to love this one, I think, even more, and to just adore what the team has done with Miles, and to be so thrilled by the future because of this game. It is a wonderful adventure that perfectly set me forward with the PS5. It was the perfect, you know, first game to really play through on PS5. It's wonderful to have. And thank you again to you and the team, and congratulations on the launch. I'm so excited that it's out there and we get to all talk about it together now.
Yeah. And I know that like we've been sort of non-critical. It's just been it's such a tough year, and to have this gorgeous thing at the end of it has been really special. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks and, so much.
I think we'll unfortunately have to wrap it up there as we're running out of time. But Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I think we could probably talk about this game for hours more. There's so much with it. And I'm so glad that people will be out there and be able to get their hands on and experience it themselves. So I hope you've been listening. You've played the game already. If not, you probably heard a few things that may surprise you, but please definitely go play it. And I recommend platinuming it. It's an extremely fun platinum, in my opinion. So thank you for everything within the game. And thank you so much, Brian, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thanks for letting us talk to you. It's been a great journey, and we loved discussing that, the game with you guys.
It's been a joy, and I can't wait to see what people have to think of it and all of the amazing photo mode pictures we're going to get in the future. But that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this episode. So thank you so much to everyone watching and listening out there. We hope you're enjoying Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales. And if you haven't picked it up, go pick it up now. Thank you once again to Brian for joining us. Thank you to Lucy for co-hosting as always. And thank you to Red, our producer. But that's about it for this episode. So as always, thank you so much for watching. We hope you're safe. We hope you're well. And as always, beyond.
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 He's a menace. Too soft. He's a low energy menace. Too easy. Maybe he's a weak minded.
Oh! Hey, Jonah, looking good. Very fast.
Menace! A feckless, treacherous, unhinged menace. Jared! Right.
Mijo, ¿dónde está? It's getting late.
Hey, Mom. Yeah, coconut milk. Still trying to find it. It's been kind of an adventure.
Are you running?
Yeah, sorry. I'm trying to catch the train.
Mira, mijo. ¿Estás mentiroso? Grab the milk and hurry home.
Sí, Ma. Te quiero mucho.
Yo también te quiero.
Now or never, Miles. We gotta stop him.
On my way.
We gotta bring him down fast!
Yeah, what do we do?
Let us raise temperature!
Oh, bad, bad, very bad!
Pete, are you okay?
No.
No!
I'm okay. I've got him. Headed your way. Be ready.
Okay. Yeah. Might, need a minute.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.